Guess who do we have with us?
I forget, but I've got a cue card here, and it says this is Doug Stewart. He is from the Pilot Proficiency Center, or Project.
We went over that with you.
I know. I crossed it out, too. That's what's really bad.
Can't teach him anything.
The Pilot Proficiency Project over at the Learn to Fly Center. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you folks doing today?
Well, good. How about you?
Well, it's getting towards the end of the week. It's starting to become hard.
Yeah, it is. Things are falling apart with us already.
Entropy. Anyway, Pilot Proficiency Project. I can't even talk piece that fast. What exactly are you guys doing over there?
Okay, what exactly we are doing is running a project. We've realized, we being SAFE, Society of Aviation and Flight Educators, that one of the main reasons pilots are starting to get into trouble, not necessarily with fatal accidents, but certainly with landing accidents, some takeoff accidents, because of a lack of proficiency with the cost of flying, the fact that fuel's so expensive. Pilots aren't flying as much, and they're losing their proficiency. And so we came to EAA with this proposal to run a project that comprises four seminars in the morning before it gets real noisy, dealing with proficiency issues, a vast variety of things. Rich Stoll and I yesterday did one on tips and tricks for tailwheel pilots. It started at 8 in the morning. We had them standing 5 deep.
Wow.
To do it. So pilots are excited about this. But then we also, with the wonderful cooperation of the Redbird folks, Jerry Gogar was thrilled to help us out with this. We have an FMX over there, and we have created 11 different scenarios. They're pre-programmed, 11 different scenarios. Some are IFR, some are VFR. There's high-density altitude takeoffs and landings. There's even a fun one, a landing on the Ronald Reagan in the middle of San Diego Bay. You better have your short field skills up.
Now, what exactly are you flying?
It's a 172, a G-1172 in
yeah,
the FMX.
Carriers are huge.
Well,
so provided you don't fly into the end of it.
Let me tell you, I've been there and done it, and I got it on the deck, but I had to turn off on that other takeoff runway. So I wanted to go back and do it again, and the second time I ran right into the back. But you get behind the power curve there in a 172, it can be interesting to try and drag it in on the backside of the power curve.
Right.
Anyway, we have 11 different scenarios. Pilots have to sign up the day of that. Yesterday, every slot was filled by 9 o'clock.
Wow.
We also have, not only in the FMX and these scenarios, but we also have sign-ups to work with their crosswind trainer, which is actually over at the Redbird tent. You do have to sign up at the Learn to Fly Center, but then pilots can go to work on their crosswind landing skills, and anyone who has flown that Redbird crosswind landing trainer, it's...
Is that the one where you sit in the chair, and then the chair can move X and Y back
chair,
and forth?
Chair moves back and forth. You do not have control of pitch and power. You don't control glide slope. That's set. So you're not working with the wind shear or things of that issue on your glide slope. You're working just with the crosswind component.
Right, just trying to stay on center.
Exactly. But it's reading out digitally. When you land, it reads out digitally how far you are from the center line in inches and your angle relative to the center line in degrees. There's no fibbing.
I was going to say, there's some bragging rights there.
Yes, there certainly is. It was neat. When they opened up at the Skyport, we had a contest for everyone who was there, for all the instructors and whatnot, and it comprised a short field landing on the Reagan and then the crosswind trainer, and the top three people then had to fly in a crosswind trainer, and boy, was it a gusty day. But there was also hail, and hail was the form. We all had buckets of ping pong balls.
Wow. I don't think they covered that one in the weather briefing. 50% chance of ping pong balls on final.
Yeah, it was a hoot. But what I'm really happy to say is that this pilot proficiency project, I had gone to Rod Hightower and said, you know, this is what we'd like to do, and we were greedy. We wanted an entire building to do it. And he said, well, we'll give you the Learn to Fly Center this year as a proof of concept, and I think we've proven it. I got to see Rod for a few moments yesterday, and I said, have you been over to check it out? He said, not yet. And I said, well, look for your reports, because we knocked it out of the park here.
Good.
Well, that's always good. I've always been a firm believer in pilot proficiency, especially after I tried a crosswind simulator and completely lost it.
I think it was the same crosswind simulator.
It might have been.
The first year it was here.
You did better than I did, and you scared the heck out of your instructor's wife one night in crosswind.
Yeah, well, that was a long time ago, and you don't take a student pilot who doesn't have a lot of experience give them a 172 fully loaded and then do night crosswind landings.
Exactly.
Not a good situation. Yeah.
Exactly. They have taken that up. If you did it the first year, there was just a white line out in front of you. Now there's actually, you see a runway. They've upgraded it quite a bit. It's still doing the basic side to side, but you actually have visuals.
The one thing that I learned, you know, they always it's very easy to crab an airplane down to the runway, but then in the last 20 feet, it gets incredibly busy.
Exactly.
You got a whole lot to do. What I started to do was I would just, as soon as I was on the final, I would set up the slip and just fly it all the way down to the runway.
Absolutely.
I found that to be easier.
That's the way I teach it. I've got over 10,500 hours of dual given. And personally, that's quite often the way I fly. When I'm in my tail wheel, quite often because I'm forward slipping, I might have to kick it out into the side slip so I'm not crabbing. But when I'm teaching, especially the student pilot, I teach get established in that side slip out there at least a couple hundred feet above the ground for your last quarter mile or so of final so that you can work that slip rather than having to transition from the crab into the side slip. It really makes it a lot easier, especially for the beginning pilot and actually sometimes for those who've been flying thousands of hours.
Yeah.
Well, that is for sure. What have you seen in the line of weak spots on pilots?
The line of the weak
spots. Usually right above the belt on the left side. Okay.
Actually, certainly the crosswind skills atrophy very quickly. The other one, I do a lot of technically advanced training, and a lot of pilots start to really rely on their automation. Sometimes the weak spot is they move into this equipment, technically advanced equipment. The weak spot is trying to catch up with the automation management. Why did it do that? And they start pushing buttons. They get kind of impulsive on their button pushing and just bury themselves deeper and deeper into the problem. The other thing then becomes that they become dependent upon this automation. And we all know automation fails. In fact, when I flew out here, it was an eight-hour flight. There's a fuel stop in the middle. My autopilot failed as soon as I leveled off. I will typically hand fly my departure until I level off. I'll couple up while I manage my energy and get fuel and all of that set, and then I'll go back to hand flying sometimes. As soon as I leveled off, the autopilot failed. What I'm seeing is that a lot of pilots become so dependent upon that automation that when the autopilot does fail, they have lost their hand flying skills. And particularly when we're talking IFR and people are in the clouds, if they can't hand fly that approach. And so what I advocate and work with my clients, and people do come for me from quite far distances to fly with me instruments, is what I personally do. I alternate hand flying, automate. So one approach I'll do will be hand flown, the next approach is going to be coupled, because I need both skills. And then that's where I see a lot of the atrophy going on. And then, you know, just the basic stick and rudder skills, because people aren't flying.
What about navigational skills? I mean, we got all these whiz-bang GPS things take you right to the bathroom door.
And the GPS does stand for go perfectly straight, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And should it fail, batteries go dead, whatever.
Absolutely. In fact, I even see pilots who are no longer bringing charts with them. Of course, with the advent of ForeFlight and WingX Pro and these wonderful iPads, now there's no excuse not to have a chart with them, as well as an AFD. A lot of pilots, AFD, what's that?
It was that big green book to use under the table
that sat back on the table at the FBO. There's no excuse not to have them, but that's a very valid point, is that pilots become so dependent upon that magenta line. Personally, even when I am flying with GPS, I've got a technically advanced Cardinal. I've got an Aspen in it and a 430 WAS Aztec 55X. It's a pretty sweet airplane, but all the fields that I use are just information data fields and needles. And you know, I learned on needles, and it's rare that I ever look at a moving map. But so many pilots have. Beautiful, beautiful point. Pilots become dependent upon that moving.
Well,
map.
Now with synthetic vision, you're training them to not even look out the window.
Exactly. And boy, isn't that dangerous.
Yeah. You know,
where's the embedded aluminum? And now they rely on the TIS information.
Right.
Or as we come up to ADS-B, but what about that airplane that doesn't have the transponder? What about that guy who's flying out in the pattern with a Nordo Cub, a non-electric airplane? And these pilots are not looking out the window. They're waiting for that wonderful British lady to say, traffic, traffic. And and where do they look? Where do their eyes go the very first time when the lady's saying traffic? Inside to the screen rather than outside the window.
Right.
You know, what's wrong with that picture?
That's funny. Plus, birds aren't on there.
No.
Definitely not.
I think they should be required to comply.
I can just see it. Canada geese equipped with ADS-B.
That's exactly right. You don't want to know what their squitter looks like.
No. Whoa!
Obviously having way too much fun with us.
All right.
Well, do you have a website by any chance?
Yes, we do. It is www.safepilots.org. It's all small case. Safepilots, one word. .org.
And where are you here at Oshkosh?
We are at tent 421. We're right across from the FAA pavilion down at the base of the tower, and we'd welcome anyone to stop on by and chat with us and get a cold bottle of water and be safe.
That's right. Always be safe.
I need some work on my crosswind walking technique.
I need to get back in an airplane. That's for sure.